This story happened about 5 years ago. I was in high school at the time, probably a freshman or sophomore. One night in October, me and my friends all went to the high school football game. We'll call them Josh, Sam, and Jake for the story. I remember we all walked to the game together because we only lived a few miles from the school and we all lived in the same general neighborhood. After the game was over, we all started walking back home together. It was a kind of cold night and it was very dark outside. We left the high school campus and walked down the road that led to a quieter part of town. Then we walked past a popular local farm where they sold pumpkins every fall and also had a giant corn maze. Sam jokingly said we should do the corn maze now because it was dark and kind of creepy. I was willing to do it, but Josh and Jake didn't want to, so they stood by the end of the maze and me and Sam decided to race to see who could get through it first. This maze was no joke. It was a very popular attraction in our hometown, and each fall tons of people would come to it. We got to the beginning of the maze and both started going through it. We quickly went separate directions. There was a path going left and another one going right. Sam went left and I went right. The corn was very thick and stood about 10 feet tall. I walked through the maze and took a couple of turns. The farther I got in, things started to get quieter and quieter. My friends and I are very competitive, so I was determined to win, but I couldn't help but feel a little creeped out being in the middle of a corn maze late at night. I continued for about 5 more minutes in the maze. I had no idea where I was, if I was getting closer or farther from the finish. But then I started to hear footsteps behind me. At first I thought it was Sam, or else one of my other friends decided to enter the maze, so I sped up my walking to try to beat them. I continued to hear the steps, and eventually I just wanted to see who it was, so I turned around and looked behind me. When I did, I heard the corn rustle, but I didn't see anybody. I stood there for a few seconds waiting to hear or see them, but nobody appeared, and it remained silent. I even walked backwards in the maze a little bit, but still saw nothing. I shook my head and decided to continue. I started walking again, and once again started to hear footsteps. But this time it wasn't coming from behind me on the trail, it was coming from in the corn. I could kind of see some of the corn stalks moving around from somebody walking in them. It really didn't seem like something my friends would do, and it made me a little concerned. But who else would be in there at this time? I called out, "Sam?" But there was no response. Then I said, "You're not supposed to be in there, you have to stay on the path." And I chuckled a little, hoping to see one of my friends come out of the corn. But still nothing, and things got quiet once again. I was starting to get a bad feeling and was really creeped out. I decided the best thing to do was to just get out of the maze as quick as possible. I started walking sort of fast to try to find my way to the end. Not long after starting to walk, the noises in the corn started up again. I decided to just ignore them and keep walking. But then I started hearing the footsteps change from the corn to back on the path again. As soon as they did, I turned around and looked. But this time, I saw somebody slowly coming out from behind the corn and onto the path. It clearly was not one of my friends and looked like a grown man. It was dark out and he was probably about 20 feet away. All I saw was his face, which was looking directly at me. As soon as I saw him, I took off running down the path as quick as I could. I wasn't stopping to think about which paths I would take, I just ran. I started yelling and calling out for my friends as I did. I started to barely hear their voices off in the distance. I knew I was getting closer to the end, and I kept running in that direction. When the path turned, I just ran into the corn and continued as fast as I could. Finally, I made it to the end and burst out. I saw my friends standing by the exit of the maze, which was about 20 feet to the left. Sam had already finished, and they all looked surprised to see me come out of the corn. I just ran to them and said that we had to go because there was a man in there that was following me. I started running all the way back home. My friends ran up to me and told me to relax and tell them what was going on, but I didn't feel comfortable doing so until we were far away from the maze. I finally told them the story, and they were pretty shocked. I'm not really sure who the man was or why he was in the maze, but I sometimes wonder what would have happened if he had caught up to me, and I'm always happy that I got out all right. For some background to this story, I'm a 27-year-old female. I live nearby a rather large city, and for my job, I often walk to work. It takes me about 20 to 30 minutes. There is a park with the woods that I often walk through because it's on the way and it's much more scenic. One day last fall, probably late October or early November, I was on my way to work at about 7 a.m. It was still pretty dark out at this time, but the sun was beginning to come up. I got onto the path in the woods and walked for about 5 minutes on it, but then I started to hear footsteps coming from directly behind me. Typically, I would never see anybody in the woods, and not until I got closer to work. Still, it wasn't a big deal to see somebody, but being a woman alone in a large city, in the middle of a woods, you always have to be alert. I glanced over my shoulder to see who it was, but I saw no one. It was really strange, because I was sure I had just heard footsteps. It made me a little more concerned, thinking that somebody was possibly hiding from me now. I just kept walking though, because I knew I would be out of the woods within 10 minutes. A short time later, I heard the footsteps again. I ignored them and kept walking. However, they seemed to be getting closer, so once again I looked, but I saw nothing. I knew now that something was definitely up. I reached into my purse and felt around until I found my pepper spray. Then I kept walking. The footsteps started up for a third time, and got closer and closer to me. Finally, I felt somebody grab my shoulder. I turned around quickly, ready to spray, but again, nobody was there. It was the strangest thing ever. I stood there looking around in disbelief for a good 30 seconds. I knew what I felt, and I knew what I heard. I didn't know what to do, so I just went on with my business and didn't hear the footsteps again. Needless to say, I don't walk in those woods anymore. When I was a child, I remember I always got excited when the fall came, because Halloween was one of my favorite holidays. Usually, a couple of weeks before, my little sister and I would carve pumpkins and then put them out on the front step. We would always try to carve cool faces or designs into the pumpkins. One year when I was probably 8 or 9 years old, my mother went to the store and got some really nice big pumpkins. When she got back from the store at night, we decided to carve them. I made a creepy looking pumpkin face on mine, and my sister did one smiling. When we were done carving them, my sister and I went outside to put them on the front step. As soon as we stepped out the front door though, we saw a man in our driveway. It was really dark outside, but we could both clearly see him. I couldn't make out much details about him, but I just remember that he looked kind of short and about middle-aged. As soon as he saw us, he ran away. But he didn't run back down the driveway to the street. Instead, he ran to the side of our house near our garage. My sister and I both ran back inside to our mother and told her what we had seen. She called my dad into the room, and he went outside to investigate. When he came back inside about 10 minutes later, he said that he didn't see or hear anybody out there. So after that, our parents both went inside with us, and we put our pumpkins on the front step. Then we went back inside once again. The next morning when I woke up, I went downstairs and saw that my mom was on the phone with the police. I asked what had happened, and my dad showed me that the back door to the house had been damaged and the window was smashed. Our pumpkins on the front step were also smashed. However, nothing was missing inside the house or damaged. The police came, and I ended up having to talk to them and tell them what I had saw. The man was never caught, and I don't know who he was.
The morning of September 23, 1904 was marked by gray, ominous clouds that blanketed the skies of Cincinnati, Ohio, and it was raining at around 10:15 a.m. when the principal of Pleasant Ridge School, Thomas L. Zimmerman, rang the bell for morning recess. Simmerman figured a little rain wouldn't do the children any harm as they scattered into groups and began games of baseball and partook in general tomfoolery. But the principal had seriously misjudged how fast and how strong the rain would come. And not just the rain either. A full-on storm was quickly approaching. A few minutes later, the wind picked up while a heavy rain began to fall on the schoolyard. Most of the children ran for the school building to save themselves from being soaked through, but a group of about 30 young girls made a break for the outhouse on the opposite side of the schoolyard. The outhouse was a 10-foot square framed building positioned over a 12-foot deep stone vault on the eastern side of the schoolyard. It was only 11 years old, but had to be repaired several times because of shoddy construction. It was designed for maybe only a handful of students at any one time, but on that day, just over 30 young girls were trying to squeeze into the cramped, dank space. Suddenly, and without warning, the floor on one side of the building, rotten from years of moisture, gave way, and the entire floor of the privy crashed to the bottom of the vault, taking all 30 or so of the terrified young women with it. The floor fell almost 8 feet vertically and completely shattered, sending children as young as 7 into a huge pool of sewage water that was around 4 feet deep. There was no crash at all, 12-year-old Elsie Ferguson later said. There was no noise whatsoever, the floor just fell. That's all there was to it. Not a child screamed that I'd heard. I felt the floor going and jumped quickly, clutching to the side of the door. I was left hanging on it, and with all my strength I pulled myself up and out of that place. A handful of the other girls managed to escape the same way, climbing up onto the toilet seat to make room for the others before making it to a doorway. But not all were so fortunate. Raw panic ensued, and the tragic accident quickly became a battle for their lives. The girls were unwittingly pitted against each other in a struggle for survival as they tried to climb out of the 4-foot-deep pool of human excrement, with the weaker girls crushed down by the stronger peers as they were forced under to drown in the mass of filth. You see, a mass drowning is perhaps one of the darkest, most horrifying things a person can experience, because during a panic like that, survival mechanics in the human brain kick in, and a person will find any kind of leverage at all to stay above water. This means that people will literally drag each other underwater, climbing atop each other's drowning bodies in order to stay afloat and breathing air. This is exactly what happened during the tragedy that day. Girls were actually drowning each other in a desperate bid to stay alive. A young woman by the name of Lorena Ferguson was rushing into the outhouse just moments after the floor gave way, stopping dead in her tracks when she saw the horrific scene below. Seconds later, she turned on her heels and ran back into the schoolhouse to fetch help. A few minutes later, two of the girls ran into the room and exclaimed that a girl had fallen into the vault. Principal Simmerman later told a local newspaper, "I didn't realize the awful calamity that had overcome us, but hurried in the direction of the outbuilding. On the way, I met a number of others. They were screaming wildly at the top of their voices, and it was some time before one of them could compose herself sufficiently to explain what had happened. Another young woman ran to one of the high school classrooms, which was still in session, and alerted one of the teachers there of the outhouse's collapse. And then she and 4 high school boys bolted toward the outhouse, arriving at roughly the same time as Principal Simmerman, but nothing could have prepared them for what they were about to discover. The sight of terrified young women scrambling up the walls of the collapsed outhouse, covered in human filth, was almost too much to bear. Others further down were literally swimming in weak old fecal matter, struggling to keep their head above the mass of excrement. The sight alone was bad enough, but the cacophony of screams was almost deafening. All of the girls were screeching at the top of their lungs, their cries intermittent with the sounds of gagging and retching. 2 young men were across the street in the Presbyterian church with a few others when they heard the terrified screeching of the girls running away from the outhouse in the pouring rain. As they exited the church to see what all the commotion was about, they began to hear the faint screams of the girls trapped in the vault beneath the outhouse. They heard the desperate screams of Mama, Papa, help us. Then, without as much as a word between them, the occupants of the church ran out into the rain and over to the girls' outhouse. There they found Principal Zimmerman, standing in a narrow doorway to the outhouse, looking half mad with anguish, pale with panic and unsure what to do. The men shoved him aside and got to work. They began calling out to any nearby to fetch ropes and ladders, anything that could help them fish the girls out from the pile of human waste. Zimmerman himself dropped to the ground near the open doorway, trying as best he could to reach some of the girls with just his arm, but it was impossible. They were way out of reach. Then some of the men who ran to help grabbed him by the legs and lowered him further down into the recess. This helped him rescue three of the girls before any rescue equipment even arrived, and probably saved the man a lifetime of guilt in the process, given that he had panicked so awfully in the initial stages of the rescue attempt. Especially given that the step ladders brought over for the school were far too short, and the ropes brought over were nothing but clotheslines which snapped uselessly as the girls attempted to climb up them. "While I was waiting for a longer ladder," Zimmerman later said, "I begged the children to be quiet and brave, and I would rescue them." Some of the older girls followed his commands, attempted to calm the younger ones, but it was no good. Panic had well and truly taken hold. The ladders and clotheslines repeatedly failed, and the rescuers were forced to rethink their strategy. Using quick thinking, one of the men climbed into the steeple of the nearby church and unfurled the rope off the church bell. This was much more effective a tool and helped save the lives of two more of the girls. Another one of the rescuers found a long ladder in a nearby barn and helped Principal Zimmerman dip it into the muck. It was not long enough to reach all the way from the bottom of the vault, but it was long enough for Zimmerman and some of the other men to descend and lift the girls out of the mess. The girls that were pulled out of the mess were almost unrecognizable, their eyes clenched tightly shut as they wept hysterically, gasping for breath and trying to uselessly clean the stinking waste off themselves. "The struggle down there was terrible," said a survivor named Hazel Senor, in the aftermath of the disaster. "As long as I could get out of the water and take a breath of air, I felt sure of being saved. But when I fell back into the hole, I thought it was over. The girls about me were grabbing onto me. Everyone grabbed at each other, and when we did get a hold on the wall, it was only for a second. I caught hold several times, but when I was pulled at by the others, my hand slipped. There was only a few taken out when I felt something under my feet. It must have been some little girl that had drowned. All the time I prayed. I said my prayers over and over. I could not see after a while, and as I was praying to the Lord to save me, I found the rake in my hands. When I came into the light, I saw Principal Zimmerman. I crawled up and was lifted out." After struggling in the violent frenzy among the pit of disgusting fecal matter, 14-year-old Edna Gerke again found a purchase among the brickwork and made one final attempt to pull herself out. "Far above me, it seemed somebody was coming down a ladder and called to me. Suddenly someone took hold of me. I looked back over my shoulder and saw the agonized faces of my friends, then lost consciousness and knew no more until I woke up in the schoolroom, surrounded by the bodies of my friends." Gerke's arms were horribly bruised and torn up by deep scratches. Wounds, she said, were down to the clawing attempts of her classmates to climb over her out of the stinking mess of filth. The rainstorm ceased not long after, but the break in the weather did little to relieve the chaos that was unfolding on the schoolyard. A fair few of the girls passed out not long after emerging from the sewage, adding the fear that they had succumbed to the terrible fumes of the cesspit they had fallen into. But thankfully, neighbors of the school offered up their homes as treatment centers, with rescuers carrying girls to the safety of houses where they were revived, cleaned up, and comforted after such a harrowing ordeal. After Zimmerman helped the 19th and final girl off the ladder and watched other rescuers carry her away into the schoolhouse for treatment, he leaned inside the shattered outhouse and peered into the dark, silent cesspit. All he could see were broken pieces of outhouse floor floating around in the surface of the foul water. As he realized the task was over and the adrenaline began to fade, he could have easily fallen into the cesspit himself if it wasn't for other rescuers coming to check on him. But then it was early afternoon, and the sun had finally broken through the clouds, shedding an oddly warm light on such a horrific scene of chaos, filth, and death. The gathered mass of onlookers and rescuers doubled as relatives began streaming in from downtown Cincinnati. It had taken only an hour or so for word-of-mouth accounts of the fatal collapse to reach the wider citizenry. When they heard the news, Pleasant Ridge residents who happened to be working downtown ran back to the village, where they were met with the sight of the frantic children and mothers of the victims, who were congregated in the front of the school. Many of the girls were vomiting blood, and a local doctor in attendance was not sure if they would survive the afternoon. Frantic confusion continued for several more hours as more and more people arrived from nearby villages, although most of the girls who crammed into the privy lived in Pleasant Ridge. The routes between the school and the train stations were crammed with people. The village telephone system proved inadequate to keep up with the demand, and hundreds of people crowded around every available phone, waiting to find if their daughter was among those affected. When the adrenaline rush of the rescue abated, Principal Zimmerman and his teachers sobbed along with the parents who lost their daughters. Local medical staff looked at the exhausted and emotionally distraught principal and ordered him to a house across the street to rest. One of the doctors remained there the remainder of the afternoon, suffering from a severe headache brought on by the tension and the hours he spent inhaling the noxious fumes emitted from the caked bodies of the drowned girls. On the Sunday morning of the drowned girls' funeral, every church bell in Pleasant Ridge rang continuously from 9 a.m. when the first funeral started until 4 p.m. when the last of the four girls buried that day were put to rest. Four school friends of Emma Steinkamp, the first victim to be buried, had been tapped to be her pallbearers. The girls were bearing flowers dressed in white as they walked alongside, but after carrying the tiny casket to the front of the German Evangelical Church, they were too grief-stricken to carry on any further, so four local boys took over instead. The reverend of the Methodist Church tried to calm the sobbing crowd, but one grandmother fell weeping against the small casket, and Emma's mother fainted with a deafening shriek. At that point, two of the girls in white became hysterical and their parents carried them from the scene. The entire town and a fair portion of the rest of Cincinnati followed the hearse to the cemetery. It had been the most horrifying, revolting tragedy in the entirety of Cincinnati's recent history, one that the townsfolk would never forget. And the deaths were made all the more terrible by the fact that they had occurred in a pit of human sewage, a fate that no single person could ever deserve, let alone an innocent young girl.
Last fall, my girlfriend and I went to a pumpkin patch. It was a yearly tradition for us to carve pumpkins, so we were going to get the best ones that we could find. This pumpkin patch that we went to was owned by a nice old couple that ran it every single year. We had gone the previous year, so we came back again for a second time. We went on a Thursday evening, and it was later in the day when we arrived, which was nice because there weren't a lot of other people there. There were lots of pumpkins in a field that was right next to a large woods. The older couple that owned the place greeted us as we entered, and then we started looking for a good pumpkin. Of course, towards the front, there were not a lot of good pumpkins. Most had been picked over. But the farther you got into the field, you could see some really nice ones. I'm not all that picky about which pumpkin to get, but my girlfriend always has to have the perfect ones. So we wandered farther and farther out until we were around the corner of the field, almost in the woods, to a more secluded area. It was sort of hidden, but when we got there, we saw there were lots of nice pumpkins, and we started looking through them all. I would say we were there for about 10 minutes until it started to get really dark out, so we decided to wrap things up and get our pumpkins. But just as we were deciding on the last one we would get, we heard something coming from just inside the woods. We both looked over to see what was there. We saw what appeared to be the old couple standing halfway behind a tree, looking at us. But they both had really creepy smiles on their faces, and their eyes were open super wide. I really couldn't believe what I was seeing for a few seconds. I had no idea what they were doing. They just stood there staring. Finally, I said hello to them, but they didn't answer. They just slowly disappeared behind the tree and then walked deeper into the woods. My girlfriend was just as confused as me and really creeped out. We had no interest to go into the woods and see where they went. Instead, we walked back to the front of the field to the entrance. The couple was gone now, and we were the only people there. We decided to leave the pumpkins and just get out of there. We went elsewhere to get our pumpkins that year and haven't returned there since.
This story takes place in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park in Tennessee. For those who are not aware, the Appalachian Mountain Range is approximately 480 million years old, and I've always wondered while hiking in the park about what kind of animals once roamed the hills we hike today. In the summertime, the dense vegetation and the abundant rhododendrons can take you back to a prehistoric age when the dinosaurs would have foraged among the same hills the hikers now casually walk, basking in the unparalleled beauty that is the Smokies. This event happened in late December, when the leaves fall off the deciduous trees, opening the hills to your eyes, allowing you to see the contours of the land as you hike. Me and my girlfriend were staying in the small town of Weirs Valley, which is approximately 45 minutes west of the bustling tourist trap of Gatlinburg. We'd stayed in Gatlinburg in years past and decided that this year we wanted a small cabin, far from the normal hustle and bustle of the late December tourist rush. Many of the locals spitefully call this period from Christmas to New Year's Hell Week. Knowing this, we decided to stop at a small hiking store and inquired about a day hike that would take us far into the backcountry. They pulled out a map detailing the western end of the park and showed us multiple trails that would fit our description. We ended up settling on a trail that was about 4 miles one way, with a massive waterfall as the reward at the end of the trail. We arrived at the trailhead at about 9 in the morning, and there was only about one car there already. Perfect. It was an elderly couple getting their packs ready for their hike, and we were excited at the lack of hikers. As our goal for the day was to try and not see a human being for the entire hike, the first half of the hike was entirely uneventful. We reached the waterfall after about 2 hours or so, and sat down and took a lunch break before departing back towards the trailhead. Before I continue the story, I want to make a note that we had not seen a single person the entire hike so far. We had not even seen so much as a plane flying overhead. That's why we turned the corner on the trail and we froze in our places. There was a girl walking alone about 50 yards ahead of us. Now, normally it's not uncommon to see people hiking alone, but they typically look the part. They usually have a hiking pack, hiking shoes, and they'll almost always acknowledge you and ask you how your day is before you go in your separate ways. Not this girl. First and foremost, she did not look like she belonged out there. She looked like she was about 15 or 16 years old, and she did not have a bag or any watch. She was about 15 or 16 wearing tennis shoes, which was odd considering that this rugged trail demanded heavy hiking boots. We were shocked to see her out this far by herself, and we were even more disturbed that we didn't see her before turning the corner on the trail. She essentially appeared out of nowhere. After me and my girlfriend exchanged concerned looks, we decided to continue down the trail as normal, as we didn't want this girl to turn around and see us just standing there and spook her. We made ourselves known as best as we could by kicking rocks with our boots and talking to each other. This girl didn't turn around and acknowledge us or even respond to us one time, even when we said hello. After about 50 yards of following her at a distance, we reached a creek crossing with a rudimentary path of dry rocks as the only way to cross. She put her arms out to balance herself, and we both noticed that when she put her arms up, it didn't look right. Unless you had terrible balance, there was no reason to balance yourself on this little creek crossing. Calling it a creek is almost giving it too much credit, as it was more like a gentle stream coming off the hill that crossed the trail and flowed to the river below. The water at its deepest was no more than 6 inches. And if you had halfway decent hiking boots, you could simply walk through the water without getting your feet wet. Wanting to be considerate of our fellow hiker, we decided to wait behind her as she arduously crossed the creek. She took way more time than she needed to cross, and it felt like she was deliberately walking slow to creep us out. We crossed the creek in about 30 seconds time after watching her take 2 or 3 minutes. Keep in mind, this creek was maybe 15 feet long at that, and as I mentioned, maybe 6 inches deep. I decided to cross before my girlfriend, because I had a nauseating feeling in the pit of my stomach about the entire situation, and I wanted to put something between her and my girlfriend. Because I had my eyes glued on this girl, I wasn't paying attention to where I was walking, and my foot slipped from the rock and fell into the water, making a very loud splash. Even though this girl was less than 20 feet ahead of us, she still did not turn around and acknowledge us. After me and my girlfriend crossed the creek, we could see that shortly ahead were a set of switchbacks going down the mountain. We decided to stop and put some distance between us and the girl. She was walking at an incredibly slow pace, and we waited for a couple of minutes before we saw that she had gone around the corner down the first switchback. Me and my girlfriend had a brief conversation about what the heck just happened, and we collected ourselves and continued down the trail. We didn't think anything much of it, we just tried to continue going without being unnerved any further. We thought that was the case, and so, when we turned down the first switchback and saw something terrible, well, we saw nothing at all. The girl had vanished, unless she took off at a sprint as soon as she turned the corner. We should have seen her. The switchback was very gradual, and we could clearly see the next 5 or 6 switchbacks below us. The leaves were gone off the trees, allowing us to see every foot of the trail below. Even if she started running, we would have heard her. The main river was about 500 feet below us, and the rushing water was barely audible from where we were standing. She either vanished, hid behind a tree from us, or somehow managed to sprint a quarter mile down the mountain in complete silence away from us. We had absolutely no idea what to think, so we once again stopped to collect ourselves. We were terrified and were not sure whether to go back up the mountain or continue down as planned. After a hurried deliberation, we decided to proceed down the trail as normal. We never saw her. As we reached the trailhead, we ran into a group of hikers, and we figured we'd ask them if they saw a teenage girl hiking along without a backpack. They gave us a strange look, and said we were the first people they'd seen on the trail all day. We simply thanked them and continued, as to not scare them. I've always heard of paranormal things happening in the Smokies, from Bigfoot to skinwalkers, to a group of wild mountain people living primitively within the park. I've always entertained these stories because who doesn't love a good ghost story? I've never anticipated having an encounter of my own in the woods. The scariest thing to me about the encounter all these years later, though, is that we never saw her face.